Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. A new poll released this week by Public Policy Polling shows that Governor Pat McCrory's approval rating has dropped significantly, with 39% of voters approving of the job he's doing, while 50% of voters disapprove. The General Assembly is even less popular. Here to talk about the political implications of the conservative agenda adopted by state lawmakers this year and the upcoming U.S. Senate race is political scientist Andy Taylor from NC State. Well, Andy, thank you very much for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the General Assembly session, not so much in the nuts and bolts of what happened, but what the impact is. Obviously, they weren't very cautious in some of their measures. They certainly had an agenda, an ideological agenda, and they pursued it. What do you think the medium and long-term political ramifications of this session are for the Republicans?
You mean political rather than policy
repercussions?
I think a couple of things to put in context. The next election, of course, is a midterm election. And generally speaking, those are bad for the candidates of the president's party. We're not really sure how the 2014 midterm is going to, the macro conditions of the 2014 midterm are going to look like. Although it's my sense that it will probably be a kind of status quo election. There will be moderate gains possibly for Republicans nationally, maybe even hardly anything. But it certainly shouldn't be a bad year for nationally for Republicans. So that's something that's sort of countering any kind of energy that Democrats have. But certainly it does seem as though there has been some negative reaction, particularly amongst the Democratic base, to what's happened. And so if Democrats can recruit candidates, and when I say recruit, I don't mean angry people. I mean skillful people, talented people. I'm sure there'll be a lot of angry people who want to run. But the question is, will skilled, talented, experienced candidates come out? They might be able to make some inroads in the General Assembly. However, we all know how the maps are drawn. Getting a majority in either body is probably out of reach. I mean, I would think, all other things being equal, they'd probably need about 55% of the two-party vote to get a majority. And that's going to be very, very difficult, maybe somewhere around that. But I think there are some very vulnerable seats for Republicans here, particularly in the mountains and in suburban areas, and especially around here. If you think of House seats such as Chris Malone's seat, Jim Fulghum's seat, Tom Murray's seat, Nelson Dollar's seat in the House, Barringer's and Neil Hunt's seat in the Senate, they're marginals in an era when there are hardly any.
Right.
Most seats are very Republican or very Democratic. And so it's possible they could be, but that's still going to make them shy of a majority. So what happens in the next? Well, yeah, the Republicans still have the majority. And by the way, both parties are so cohesive now and the power is so centralized in each body of the General Assembly that a 3-seat or 4-seat majority might be as good as a 15-seat majority. So you might not see much change in General Assembly, but the question would be, how would the governor react to that? Because he's going to be up with a different constituency, statewide constituency in 2016. And it's possible, let's say Speaker Tillis or Leader Berger are one of them is the Republican candidate against Senator Hagan in 2014. And that becomes a referendum on the General Assembly. And the Republican candidate wins by a lot or a Republican candidate loses by a lot. That could also have some effect.
And that's one more thing about the General Assembly is, regardless of what folks think of the things that they've done, I think it's fair to say that they did a lot of things that changed directions. This wasn't a session about we're going to change taxes and do some economic things. There's abortion, there's voting rights. There's a lot of things that got a lot of folks upset. So I wondered if somebody was a Republican consultant, might it have been wiser for their political future to say, let's do this agenda over time and not get everybody
possibly
excited?
But then, you know, the other argument is, let's get it out in a non-election year. My sense is that next year, as long as the economy doesn't go south again, you know, there might be some goodies in the budget next year in the adjustment. You know, and the argument would be, okay, we took care of structural issues, we took care of the Medicaid issue, we took care of the unemployment insurance issue. There were some horrible structural things we had to deal with. And now, look, things are turning around, and here you go, state employees, and here you go, teachers. If you're thinking of it purely in a crass political way, which I don't think a lot of the Republican members do, but if you do, then that is as good a strategy as the one I think that you suggested, which is, you know, move it slowly. But, you know, if you move stuff in the short session in 2014, it's fresher on in the mind.
What do you make of McCrory's year so far?
You know, he's in a tough spot, I think. He campaigned as someone who was a sort of more kind of pragmatic style conservative. He was definitely campaigned as a conservative. I think people who said, you didn't campaign, I mean, that's wrong. Obviously, he campaigned more as a sort of solutions person, a pragmatic person, someone who cared more about results than ideology. And he goes into the governor's mansion and he meets up with legislative majorities from his party that have been placed for 2 years already. So they're sort of, we were here first. And regardless of what you think about Phil Berger and Tom Tillis, their conferences are fairly conservative. And, you know, they do have a certain amount of control, but at the same time, they got to corral these people. And they're probably to the right of the governor. And so the governor's sort of stuck here. I think he genuinely embraces a lot of the agenda, but I think some of the things make him a little bit uncomfortable. It's shown a bit. Normally, we have leadership out of the governor's mansion, even though the North Carolina governor, in comparative sense, compared to governors across the country, is actually quite weak. Generally, the governor leads the agenda. And I think it's been pretty clear here in many cases that the governor has been not leading. It's been the General Assembly that's been leading, and he's sort of come along at the end and sort of, you know, shall I veto, or how will I sign, or will I ask them to change things? And that's been pretty clear.
Let's talk about elections and politics. You mentioned Kay Hagan's race in 2014. Obviously, Speaker Tillis is running.
Yeah.
Senator Berger's considering running. Renee Elmers is not running.
Right.
Mark Harris, a minister in Charlotte, has a lot of support from the religious right, is considering running. Where do you think that race stands at the moment?
In the national context, it could be the pivotal race. So let's say there's an overall national sort of slight Republican bump. The North Carolina race may be the difference between a Republican majority and a Democratic majority. So there's going to be a lot of focus on that race. You know, a lot of prognosticators are saying this is the pivotal race. If whoever wins it will control the Senate. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of national attention, tremendous amount of national money. And it's going to be a very, very close race. A lot will depend upon who the Republican nominee is. If it is Tillis or Berger, a lot will depend upon, you know, the nature of the campaign. Presumably, Senator Hagan would try to make it about the General Assembly. The Republican candidate will want to make it about Washington, the stagnation there, and the sort of and a kind of referendum on the Obama administration, and tie Senator Hagan to that. So, you know, who can control the debate is going to be very important. But I don't see anything else but a very, very competitive and heavily scrutinized election.
What role do you think the conservative right of the Republican Party will play? You know, if you look at the conservative bloggers, they're not very fond of Tillis. They think somehow he's sold them out or he's too liberal. If he's the candidate, will those folks embrace him? Or do you think that will be one of the problems he'll face, is rallying those people?
One of the interesting things, and it's implicit in your question, of course, is that the Republican Party is not monolithic.
Right.
You know, despite what, you know, obviously a lot of people on the left have been sort of saying, you know, these guys are all in lockstep. I mean, there are factions. And that is one of the prices you pay for being, the Republican Party is North Carolina's majority party. But certainly we're in a very, very competitive two-party state. So sometimes a majority party. And so that's one of the price you pay. Senator Hagan's got to tiptoe that as well. There are people, the Democratic Party is a diverse party as well. And she's going to have to sort of, she'll win the nomination, but there may be people who don't feel particularly excited, Democrats who might not feel particularly excited to vote for her in the November.
And finally, before I let you go, I guess everybody always believes that the economy, and it is, how people perceive the economy is what drives a lot of the elections. But how does it work when we have one party in the White House and one party in state government? Let's assume, and I hope, that the economy does rebound some, that North Carolina's unemployment rate does come down some. The Republicans in North Carolina will claim credit. The Democrats in Washington will claim credit. How does a voter sift through all that?
That's very difficult. You know, obviously, you've got to work out how to do it. And voters, of course, have their own predispositions. So they come into those arguments looking, you know, for things to confirm previous positions, and if they see data or evidence that refute previous positions, they just sort of cast it aside as anomalous, and you know, so that that happens all the time. That is increasingly apparently what the electorate is like. I mean, there's a lot of political science research people who do this stuff tell me, and I read about it all the time, and I think I see it as well, that, you know, you used to have an electorate that was less ideologically polarized, voters who did look as much at sort of candidate attributes and records rather than party labels. And we're increasingly becoming more of a sort of parliamentary European style democracy with two pretty cohesive parties with programmatic platforms that are very different from one another, that have some not quite European style control over the nomination process and the messaging, because we have primaries and we have a federal system and what have you. But we're becoming increasingly like that. And so even voters who consider themselves independents, and by most indicators, that's a third of the electorate still, tend to sort of fall one side or the other of what is increasingly becoming a deep divide.
It's a good time to be a political scientist.
It's always a good time to be a political scientist. Every time I talk to people such as yourself, they say that. And I don't think there has been a time. It's a really bad time or boring time to be a political scientist.
Well, thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Chris.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.